now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
All right, I'm not used to this. You're home now, but you've been traveling forever.
Oh, man.
It's like, I think I know what you look like now.
I had the best weekend home with my kids. I got to tell you, it was a good friend who lost her husband last year, came and spent the weekend with us. My kids were over, every kid's grandkids. It was wonderful. I told Sarah, I can't remember the last time I was home for a weekend.
It's some just, good family time.
Yeah, and even home and didn't have something else to do. We just literally hung out together, but...
Hey, you were Germany, Florida. Where else have you?
Well, you guys were in Florida
around
for 3 days. I was in Florida for about 10. It was kind of a.
It's muggy there.
A longer stay. Yeah, actually, for Florida in July,
that was not bad.
It's about as good as it gets. We actually had good weather, except for those driving thunderstorms in the afternoon. But that's Florida. That's July.
Walked from one block down to the next. By the time I got there, I was due for a shower.
Yeah, that's why Sarah. I showed Sarah that picture. Was you and I and Paul with, I won't say who it was, what's a celebrity. Anyway, they took this picture, and my daughter goes, this is a great photo. Look who's in the polo shirt and who's wearing the tie and coat. And you were wearing the tie and coat. And
I was looking great.
Yeah, the whole, I've never done a book signing at an ICRS convention before. That was a little weird. The whole group.
But there were some people in your line. It was awesome.
You know, I had people out there paying people $10 to come in my line and sign the book. But one fun thing, I'll tell you, one fun thing when I was in Florida, I spoke to a convention of visual media people, movie makers, and that was even before the whole Shaq thing. They wanted me to come because of the He Loves Me book and do their devotional each morning, which was fun. One of the things we got to do with that was travel out to the Kennedy Space Center one afternoon. And
yeah, you called me from, like, Astronaut Central.
Oh, my goodness. It was just... we didn't get there in time to actually take the buses out to the real launch pad, so I've got to go back someday.
You weren't there for a shuttle ride?
They got this new thing.
I thought Wayne's an astronaut.
This is another thing they've got. It's a shuttle launch simulator.
What?
Yes, you crawl in this ride, just like the Star Wars thing at Disneyland, and they rotate this thing up. It feels like vertical. I'm sure it's not. They put you on top of the fuel tank, and they light that puppy, and they simulate the G-forces and buffeting.
What?
Of riding up on a shuttle into space.
You did that?
I did it.
Oh. You're an astronaut, Wayne.
Oh, I'm telling you. It was awesome. You got jerked around like you wouldn't believe. Everybody's face is lobbing all over the place. I'm telling you what. It just beat you to death. And then when it finally throws off the external engines, then the ride smooths a little bit. You're not near as bouncing as hard. And then it slips into space right at the end. It was a cool ride, I tell you, if you're near Florida.
You go to Florida, why go to Disneyland? You go to Nassau. That's awesome.
Well, people have their priorities, I guess. For me, it's not the mouse. I got to tell you, it's not the mouse. But then I spent 2 weekends with different groups of folks that are really asking wonderful questions on this journey. When we were in Florida, I had someone from Poland sitting in on our weekend in Melbourne and had a wonderful time getting to know him. His cousin lives here. He's an immigrant from Poland. He's just visiting from Poland, said a fella. And we had a great time talking to some of the theology, the Shaq, and He Loves Me. And so, yeah, it's been good, but I'm home now for about a month. I've got one little family trip very briefly, and then I've got two other very small trips, both bridge builder trips, one to Utah to help with the state legislature there, work on some civility issues, interestingly enough. And then down to Florida, where they've had a lawsuit over a gay discrimination issue, and they're afraid to start school again this fall without some training for teachers. So, yeah, going down, train some teachers down in the panhandle of Florida. May get near that guy that wrote that stuff song a long time back. I'm hoping that...
The stuff song?
Remember that? Got my stuff. I need a new car. I need a yacht.
Oh, yeah. That? That's hilarious.
Yeah. To Sean. I'm trying to remember his last name. Sean. Anyway... I'm going to see if he's available in the area. I'd love to get a chance to meet him. So,
working on another little kid's book. It's really funny.
Another one?
Looking for Jesus of Nazareth.
Oh, I've got a whole
about little mouse going on this search. And He meets the Ferrucci's and the Sadducci's. It's funny. It's going
to
be great.
You have to be an adult to get it?
No, I think kids, the whole desire of this is to sort of bring it down to a kid's level of what does it look like to go find this person, Jesus.
Huh.
And it's funny. But, I mean, I think you get it at all levels, but I can't wait. It's
wow.
Funny.
That does sound fun. I've got a whole fairy tale in my computer about mouses named by cheese names. Someone I stayed with in Germany, and I haven't even had a chance to look at it yet, but it's a tale for, I guess, teenage kids about cheese and mice, and it's supposed to be really cute, but I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, so I'll get to it at some point. Got a lot of email, though, while we've been gone running around the world. And,
yeah, but inbox, hey, I'm down from 1,000 in my inbox down to 112.
This after your 10th bankruptcy declaration, or is this?
Yeah, I have lost count. I'm just saying this last weekend.
Yeah.
I went from way too many down to 112. I there's hope. There is hope.
When I have 112 in my inbox, I want to hurl.
I know, but I've been up. Yeah. I've been in the master land of.
Boy.
I didn't know my inbox could be that full.
I'm thrilled when my inbox is laying about 12 or 13, but right now it's about 75. So I'm trying to get to it too. Be tough, but we did get some. So we got this one from James, and he was talking about a podcast a few weeks back about God making God too nice. And he talked about he really loved having Darren Hufford on there with us. He said, I think most of you brought up in the churches with the view of the lion. I think most of us were brought up in churches with the view of the lion side of God, our Father. However, the New Testament seems to show the lamb side of God. I think the podcast leaned more to this side, lamb side, than the other. And that's not a bad thing. But what about the lion side of God? What's the balance?
The lion side of God.
I guess that's between the God who punishes and the God who's safe to hang out with. And I really, when I read this, and
which one was slain before the foundation of the world? The lion?
Be the lamb, I believe.
I mean,
when I read this, I don't see these as two sides of God. I guess that's where I have a disconnect with this email. Because God is an integral entity. He's not. Well, some ways, days I'm this, and some days I'm that. So I think I would go back and say, is there really a lion side of God in the Old Testament and a lamb side of God in the New?
I would say no, because I don't think God is expressing himself as schizophrenic. When you look at some of the passages like Moses' moments with God, the intimacy found in Exodus, where they're talking, you know, face to face. And you got God expressing his desires and expressing himself in terms of his long-suffering patience. Just going like, that's right alongside those other moments where you're just like, gosh, it seems severe. So I don't think there's the one or the other. And I don't know that it's just two, you know, like one, you know, two sides of a coin. God's an integrated whole. Is he holy? Yes. Is part of that understanding that, guess what, you're not supposed to necessarily just be casual disregard and flip it? Yeah. Okay, so maybe there's some honor and respect, but there's also some playfulness and intimacy. They are part of the integrated person of God. And I think when you sort of make a lion and you make a lamb, you sort of take apart a personality that's meant to be understood as a whole.
Yeah, those are just metaphors for aspect. I think the lion side is God as the victor and the king. And, you know, there's enough lion stuff in Revelation in place of the New Testament where God gets to win. God is the victor overall. That's just there. But the temper of that personality is this lamb. When you know him through the cross of Jesus Christ, there's no one safer to be with than the lion of Judah.
When the lion is roaring, am I supposed to be running afraid of him?
Yeah, that's the point.
Or am I supposed to be celebrating with what that roar is about? If it's about triumphing over sin and death and the grave, then I'm supposed to be roaring with him. I'm supposed to be, yeah! That is not a lion roaring at me like, you better. I mean,
right.
But I think that's the disconnect, is I think people go like, whoa, because religion has used that lion side to curb behavior.
To batter people into conformity.
It's like I'm going to frighten you into submission, where I'm just going like, exactly, if the ultimate expression of who God is, Old and New Testament, is Jesus walking the planet, well, how did he relate to people? Look at the Gospels. I mean, if Hebrews is saying, look, God has spoken in many ways throughout the ages, and yet here's the ultimate revelation. It's my son, Jesus Christ. You look at that, and it's like, okay, then is he walking around terrorizing towns? Is he in? No. And you look at the relational nature. It's like there's only one time that you see this sort of ferocity of a lion, and it's in the cleansing of the temple when all it was is about merchandising his father's temple. That's the one time he really gets all ticked off.
Does he? I was reading that story recently, and at the end of him clearing the temple, the little kids were dancing and celebrating and cheering him. Now, I would think if Jesus became the raving lunatic, our movies generally show him when he clears the temple.
As far as if it's just done in anger and all this
right,
stuff.
Right, in rage. Why would these kids would have run for the hills? This is a deranged man. I don't know any kid that stands around and watches that. So you got it. It makes me wonder then, how did Jesus really do that? Did he do it in a way that was, and I think this is what marvelous about Jesus. Never once in his love or compassion for people, uncommitted to truth and justice. For Jesus, those things didn't live in a conflict. There was no inherent conflict between, I love you, I care about you, and I want to bring you to the fullness of relationship with Father in the truth of it all. So for us, I think when we learn these, when we learn God as propositional phrases, sometimes compassionate, sometimes mean, sometimes we get to love him, sometimes we
can't. There's a lot of baggage with that stuff.
There is, and then you're dealing with always, how do I balance these things? And I just don't think we balance them. I think, James, what I would say is know him as a whole, as an entity. You'll know times God's very serious about things, and there's times he's incredibly playful about things, and it's all wrapped up in the same person. It's not someone that we have to be afraid of. Someone sent me a picture recently.
It's like an alcoholic, abusive father that when he's on a binge is a roaring, raging drunk. And then at other times, well, I guess he's normal and he's okay today.
Well, I guess religion's taught us to picture him that way. The picture I like someone sent me recently was JFK Jr., John Kennedy Jr., playing under the desk of his father's. It's that old Resolute desk with a trap door in the front of it. And you got President Kennedy up there doing something with the paperwork. And little John was playing underneath the desk beneath him. And I think that's a great, the most powerful man in the world at the time. And who's safe in his presence? His son. His son said they're playing on the floor, playing at his desk, and the father is not threatened by that at all. Father's not, well, my son doesn't respect me enough. I better, you know,
how dare you?
I better bomb something just to prove I can do it. That's just not the heart of it. So I think, and then he brought this question from the same podcast. He said when Darren said that using First Corinthians turning, God's not self-seeking, but he said Jesus never stopped people or rebuked them from worshiping him. When the person fell at Peter's feet, Peter said, "Stop, for I'm only a man." Jesus let people worship him. Is this self-seeking? What about the verse in John 4 that says the Father seeks those to worship him in spirit and in truth? Is this self-seeking? If I had a friend who loved for people to worship him, I don't think I would want to be around him. God loves it when we worship him. Does he?
Yeah, he's an egotistical maniac who's insecure unless we're constantly praising him.
No. We've been taught to think that.
Well, and I don't even know that we've been taught to think that. I don't think we've actually thought this thing through. What is it to really worship God?
Well, I wonder if we project on it what we see. You know, we like it when people praise us. We like the whole...
Well, yeah, our ego gets inflated. We become more valuable if someone does that in our own mindset.
And we put people on pedestals and wish we could be up there getting the adulation of the crowd. For us, I think worship is incredibly egocentric.
Well,
but I don't think it is for God.
No, but also if you were secure in who you were and someone comes alongside and says, you know what, I just so appreciated when you did that. If all of a sudden that massively inflates your insecure ego into something really valuable, that's not a helpful thing for you necessarily. If you're very secure in who you are and someone comes by, genuinely praises and appreciates something you did that was valuable, I don't think your personal value all of a sudden is now enhanced.
Right.
Nothing's changed.
Right.
You can sit there and go, great, thanks.
Yep.
On with the rest of life. I haven't all of a sudden gotten a big head because I didn't say, oh, no, don't say that to me. When people do that, you just go like, what is your issue?
Yeah.
Why can't you? That's just genuine, honest evaluation. Thank you. That was helpful.
Yeah, I knew God was behind it, but I appreciate your part in it. So, okay, thanks.
When I ask, you know, what is worship, I think worship, part of it could be described as clear seeing. All of a sudden, I see him for who he is, and a natural response to the genuineness of who he is wow, amazing, holy, you're awesome, God. That isn't, you know what, I better do this. God might be having a down day. I better lift him up. You know, I want to make sure that the planet goes well today, so I want to beef him up before I go anywhere. Hey, God, you're awesome.
But when that's the most important thing you do on a Sunday morning, is you gather people in a building, and you've got people saying great things to God. Why? Because I think in the back of our minds, I know
that's just a warm-up for the message, dude.
I did this for years. I'm thinking, God really loves this. The more I say wonderful things to God...
He feels giddy.
Not even that, but the more inclined he might be to bless me. You know, God inhabits the praises of his people. So it's like, if we can really get this praise, I really think
the self-serving is not really on the deity side. It's on the, how do I appease this deity
side? Well, when we think it's on his side, that he really loves to be worshipped.
Yeah, I'm going
to
butter him up and then give me the
goodies. It does become self-seeking on our side. If I do think one thing that's true here, that this was a disconnect for me. My daughter writes the loveliest things on Father's Day cards, and I got one from her when I was in Europe because Sarah brought it over. And she says it was a wonderful thing. Oh, I just can imagine a better dad. You're the best. I love you. Now, Julie was over on Sunday. Would I really want her to come over here in the first half an hour, sit on the couch and tell me what a great dad I am and how awesome I am? And I'm just sitting there going, yep, yep, yep. I might give you lunch now, because you kind of worked your way to a place where, yep, I like. I'm thinking, man, if my daughter and her kids and husband are coming over here, from the first moment, I don't need to hear what a great dad I am. What I want to do, how you doing, what's going on with the kids, what's life about, I want to engage her at a relational level. That was a disconnect. I do sit now, because I speak in places like that, where we're doing this half hour, 45 minutes, trying to butter God up, trying to let him know we're his people, and he's just the best. And, you know, now we got cheerleaders up front dancing and waving flags. And I'm like, what is all this? This is not my deal. Other people love that deal. I love singing with brothers and sisters. I love coming into fresh awareness of how great God is. That benefits his thought, is that this is good for them. They're recognizing who I am. This will bring liberty into their lives. I think that's what Darren meant when we talked about being self-serving. I don't think Jesus is, or love is, wow, got to have stuff from you so I feel good about me. It's all about what this is doing in you. And for Peter to come to a recognition of who Christ is, for others to come to that recognition, that's a powerful thing.
Yeah, but I don't think it's void of the fact that it can also touch and bless his heart. It's just not coming from a place of insecurity and need. I don't know that God needs us to worship him at all.
I agree with you.
So I might need to worship him. It might be valuable. There might be merits in doing it. But it's like, why do I tell my wife I love her? Well, because I do.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't tell her I love her because she needs me to say it, and I'm just feeding that need. I tell her I love her because I do.
And yeah, when you're grateful to somebody for what they're...
2 + 2 = 4. I do.
Yeah, so when you're grateful to somebody for what they're doing in your life, or what they mean to you as a reality, that's just a wonderful thing. If it's an exercise in ingratiating yourself to somebody...
I don't think it's worship.
Not so good. I don't either.
That's manipulation.
It is.
That's bribing. That's buttering up.
I don't
think those are the same thing. I mean, I'm from the vineyard tradition, okay? That was our deal. Worship, 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 worship. You know, we might not even give a sermon.
Okay? Wow.
That's how But the truth is some of the most wonderful times I've experienced in a corporate setting have been in context of genuine, true worship, where it's, I'm not trying to get something out of God. I'm not trying to get it so that if we just get it to swell and right the way, then the sky will split and revival will happen. I mean, I think all that can be bizarre. But I remember times where you're just going like, man, I've never had so much fun with other people and God, very present. And we're singing and we're enjoying him. There's a sense of beholding that you don't need songs, music, and lyrics to do that. But I enjoyed having that. Right. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that stuff, but it can be manipulative. It can be self-serving. It can be motivated from I'm going to butter him up so I get his goodies. And you're just going like, unfortunately, I don't think that's clear seeing.
And then we could even get down to whether that's even what worship is. I think sharing relationship with God with in a room with other people is a marvelous thing. What God is talking about in seeking those to worship him in spirit or truth, worship is not really about standing in a room saying stuff to God. Worship is about the way we live our lives in his reality.
Well, the first time it was used is Abraham's going up the hill with Isaac. That's the first time the word worship in all of the Bible is used. It's going up the hill. Abraham's going to sacrifice Isaac. That's a little different. I don't think they had a guitar.
I don't think so.
There wasn't a piano at the top of the hill. It was a sacrifice. And you're just going like, when we start to put this in context, it isn't our little contemporary deal that we've made it, which is basically our new rock star, you know, status.
It is. Yep. And a place for our musicians to have fun because they really eat it up. They love it. And I don't blame them. They got gifts to use and they're loving
Satan
it.
Satan was a worship leader.
Okay. That took the wrong turn. You jumped over a log there. We probably shouldn't have gone down.
But I do think there's a problem. I mean, you look at the whole thing of Lucifer, you know, the preeminent
archangel.
I'm going to go there.
Stop it.
No, I'm going to go there. Preeminent archangel, it somehow worship was meant to be filtered through him and then laid at God's feet in sort of the imagery of the Old Testament language there. And at one point, he decided to keep it for himself as opposed to ascribing it to God. And it's like, well, what is that? Did you just not pass the song along? I mean
okay.
The whole idea is to ascribe worth. That's where you get the word worship. And it's like, when you look at that, it's like, guess what? There can be a vain thing in the midst of our stuff where we mistake what's going on that is meant to be about our beholding him, and we can start thinking this is about us.
And it has far more to do with the life you're living than the words you're using.
Yeah.
If you're saying, I love you to your wife, when you treat her like dirt the rest of the day, the word is meaningless. In the end, the word is meaningless.
Yeah.
But if it is empowered by a life that reflects it, then it can be a valuable thing. We got some other folks having trouble with extended family on this journey.
No,
In some painful ways, actually. I read some of this and just go, oh, my goodness, my heart just breaks. Because you get on this journey, you discover who Jesus wants to be in your life. You may figure out the Sunday morning deal isn't enhancing that, maybe at least discouraging it in the way that you're wanting to do it. So you stop attending. Tick some people off, especially if the people you're doing it, especially if your parents are the pastor of the church
attendance is personal.
Yeah, we got this from somebody. Red Revolution, Barna's book, opened our eyes to a whole other world. And my husband went to searching the internet and found you too.
Uh-oh.
Our true journey with Abba Father has begun. That sounds great. The twist into all this for us is the family and the fact that his dad is the pastor of the church we now are not attending. I stated we are because I have left for the most part, but he has not. Surprisingly, there is so much peace between the two of us, despite this. He has blessed my departure, but is not ready to let go of it just yet. But oh, how his eyes are opened. I have never seen him so alive and passionate about his relationship with Jesus. We would love to hear you two talk about extended family dynamics with all of this. We are so alive and excited, yet it is so hurtful to have his mom express concern that we are turning new age. We can't believe we were fooled. We can't believe we were fooled by religion for so long. Now we have four beautiful daughters, 12, 10, and twins that are 7. They're trying to balance us all out. And when I first started listening and it just broke free and would hear you talk about it being hard, I had no idea what you were talking about because nothing felt hard about the freedom I was experiencing, laughing out loud until the blank hit the fan. Trying to explain to those around us who think church is equal to God, it makes me sad just to write that. That I am closer to God than I have ever been is all but impossible. My husband gave some podcasts of yours to his dad, only to get lumped to the New Age cults and Oprah in his dad's next sermon.
Oh.
So how long are you going to attend that?
Well, you know what? If you remove this from a perspective of being family, I think you get a whole lot of weird dynamics. If it's about church services, attending, and hoops and obligations, I think the whole religious thing goes real sideways. And I don't really feel like, oh, I'm on the defensive. How do I give an account for myself? I really go like, What does that have to do anything with a love relationship with Jesus? It's not my being anti-institutional. It's my being pro-relational. Going like, I'm not making the statement against church services if they help promote relationship.
Just not going promotes your lack of endorsement.
But
just
what's
not
it
going.
Matter? Man, those are insecure things if it needs my presence to validate them.
Well, no, it's not so much that. It's how much religion puts the emphasis on conformity to the expense of relationship.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut you off as a New Age Oprah-worshipping heretic just because you're saying you're finding a life in Jesus apart from sitting in my pew on Sunday morning. I mean, that's a sad from
that's his, a little self-serving.
Oh, it's horribly self-serving. But what she's asking is, what do we do about that?
You love him.
you find out what the painful side of this journey is.
No, but I do sort of think that, you know what, if you make this personal, those probably are some of the most painful dynamics to ever have to trap through. If you recognize that for some people, this is all they have been steeped in. If you can just simply be consistent, be open and available, and don't shift into having to defend yourself.
Or having to bash
them.
Their religion.
Yeah. I don't need to put it down. Just say, you know what? This is the positive side of what we're doing. I'm not making a statement about you. I mean, I think at times we do get misinterpreted as, oh, we're bashing on the church. It's like, you know what? I could care less.
Which some people would say is bashing.
Well, I guess. I guess. But the reality is, you know what? There are healthy environments where being there is edifying, instructing, and helping people understand who God is and how to relate to Him. And wherever that's happening, that's a marvelous thing.
Absolutely.
And then there's a whole bunch of other places that is not what's going on. And so my thought is, well, I'm not sure that those are all that helpful.
And everything's a mix. I mean, what we're concerned about is not sitting in a pew on Sunday morning. It's getting...
Find the perfect church.
You know, it's getting caught in religion. The whole idea that I've got to jump through hoops to perform for God.
Yeah, it's a bear trap.
And that mixture is in everything. My goodness, I've been in house churches that got more religion in it than some of the Sunday morning places. So the point is, how do we help people find that freedom? And I think what you just said about loving them and having this attitude of humility that says to people, hey, I don't know that what we're doing is right, even though you might. I don't know what we're doing is right, but I feel like this is something God's... Could you just give us some time to sort through some things? And could the relationship we have be bigger than whether or not we're there on Sunday morning? Some people will give you that freedom. I found a lot of generous souls through this season of my life by just saying, Sarah and I are experiencing something different right now. I hope you can have some patience with us. And when they could see that what I was doing didn't have to challenge what they were doing, because we've said this before on this podcast, religion is always... It's hooks in us, our desire to be approved. If we go, people approve of us. If we don't, they don't. That hook of approval is one of the things that Jesus is wanting to die in us.
Yep.
So that we can really live free. And so part of it is not trying to explain or convince to others that what we're doing is better than what we're doing or what we're doing is right and they're wrong. It's just to say, hey, we're on a bit of a different tack right now, and I hope you can bear with us and have some patience. And we really want to celebrate our relationship as family as bigger than whether we agree about church. Now, not everybody can go there. I know some parents that when their kids stop going, it is the end of the world, and they will cut off relationship even with their grandchildren over that fact. Which is just shows how sick religion is. I'm willing to throw you away because you don't fit into my conformity expectation.
Wow.
And I do it with the full stamp of God's approval in my own mind. Same way Paul ended up whacking people with rocks, I think, before he came to Jesus. This one is more painful. He said, recently I read about Jake. I was stunned at times by the simplicity of the truth coming forth. I've heard 3 podcasts and have been blessed to hear the simple truth there. Pray for me. I'm taking steps to come out of a highly religious, controlling church. My wife is still willfully subdued, as well as my 2 children. They have been shunning me for weeks. My wife and I have not been able to talk for months until a short time last night. She'll not listen openly to anything I have to say about understanding I am getting about the highly controlling nature of this church. I was put out after I told someone I had been looking at newspaper headlines and information about the shepherding movement on the internet. That must have been a danger to the status quo.
I was put out the same day. I live in a house where no one wants to talk to me. It's sad.
Ouch.
Last night, after a very stressful confrontation with my 17-year-old daughter, who said, Dad, if you don't come back to this church, you will burn in hell. We are not going anywhere with you. We, my wife and children, are staying. She also said, God will replace you in my life.
Ooh.
This is not some made-up adventure for a book. This is real stuff. I'm facing these situations in my home. There is so much more. Please pray for us. I love to hear your podcast. I need the love and not the religious judgment. I've had that for years. It's trying to kill me and my family.
Wow. In that kind of situation, you know, I think the only thing that's going to work is the persevering consistency of genuine love. If he starts to try to defend himself, you're going to get a religious fight that's going to bring a divide. If he just simply is present and loves, I got to believe that somehow God knows how to inhabit that space. I don't know how to fix that.
Oh,
I don't think there's a single suggestion other than be genuine and who you really are before God, and somehow let God reflect himself in the reality of that.
And I think this is what Jesus meant when he talked about there being a sword dividing even mother and father and children. There's a time when living in the reality of who God is and people around you can't understand it. It doesn't mean you take your sword and go out and hack up relationships. It just means people will reject you. There's obviously this highly controlling church, not even willing to let somebody consider a different alternative, consider everything a threat, heresy. And because of that puts him out, and because of that turns his own children against him. And I just think we say with this brother, I wrote him back and he said, you know what, there's nothing to say except we love you, hurt with what you're going through. This is where Sarah and I are going through some of this painful stuff in a bit of our journey. When our daughter was still attending the place that we had been kicked out of for about 6 months. And it wasn't, they weren't talking down on us. She wasn't betraying. I never had this kind of conversation with my daughter. But that was a very painful time in other ways for Sarah and me. And I'll tell you, there were many, many days when, and I at least had Sarah through this. I know he hasn't even got that right now. So you've just got to get in a room alone with Father. And I said the prayer Sarah and I prayed so often this time was exactly the same prayer that Jesus prayed from the cross. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix this. I don't know. I can't put anything on me at this point other than to tell you I'm putting my whole life in your hands. Whether my family sees it or not, whether they get it or not, I'm going to live to you and be faithful to you and trust this to work out in your love for me. Mm. And I don't know what else you do at times like this. And I there's probably more times in our life than we get credit for. I think we often think there's something I can do to fix this and immediately think about what we can do. And I'm wondering if that probably isn't the first prayer we could be praying, is just getting and say, okay, God, I don't want to even what I think I could do to fix this. I don't want to do. I just want to give myself to you.
I think there's a joy in not feeling like I've got to, quote, religiously fix this. What's broken with being genuine and honest with what the Lord's doing in you? Do you need to give a defense for that?
Yeah.
I don't know that you need to. I think the reality of being secure in I am going to relate and lean on Jesus and then allowing him to be him. In the midst of all that, does he want to love that man's daughter through that man? Absolutely.
Yep.
Is that absolutely heart-wrenchingly painful for a father? Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine.
And does God want to open her eyes and his wife's eyes? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they're being taught to shun you by the very place they're going two or three times a week, does that make it even look more hopeless? It does. But I think the reality, what you're saying, God is bigger than all of those things.
Absolutely.
And there's things that God's, this is the middle of a chapter, not the end of a chapter. And you just bear through this time, brother. And my heart goes out to you because I can't imagine how painful this is.
Yeah, I mean, I look over the last decade of how God has walked us through the journey we've been on. And I think if there's one thing that has been really freeing is I've come to realize I do not need to get a bunch of followers of Brad. I don't need them to follow me into the institution. I don't need to get them to follow me out of the institution. I'm following Jesus as best I understand. And am I perfect? No, there's nothing I do that's perfect. But I'm on a genuine journey with him. And if there's anything that I can give, it's to reflect the genuineness of that journey, warts and all.
And are there dark days on that journey?
Oh, sure. There's times that, you know, dear friends of ours that, you know, sort of like they were still, quote, aligned with those people that had so badly treated and betrayed us. And you're just going like, gosh, there's somewhat pain in the fact that they're still in that association. Is that making a statement? You're just going, you know what? I don't know how to answer that. I do know I love those people. I do believe they love me. Am I going to demand that they then take sides? I don't really think – I don't see that in the gospel.
No, I don't either.
Where's the need for that? You know what? I'm going to free them just as I'm going to free myself to follow Jesus where my shepherd's directing me.
And there are dark days in that reality. I know you and I whoop it up a lot. You and I have a lot of fun. There's a lot of laughter on this journey. There's also seasons
a lot of tears too.
Of incredible pain and tears. And maybe we don't talk about that enough. I think of my brother here, the situation he's in. And I think of Jesus. We know the Gethsemane thing with loud cries and tears. You know, he pours out to his heart at God in the garden. But Hebrews tells us he often did that. There's nights he escaped away to be with God overnight. And we don't get the details on those things. But Hebrews says on this journey, for Jesus, then in constant communication with the Father, who knew him better than any of us get to know him, there were moments in this, lots often, with loud cries and tears poured his soul out to God. That's where John is right now. That's where I have been at many places in this journey, and some more recently than maybe other people would know. Because there are moments where just what God's asked you to do and where he's asked you to live causes brokenness in relationships you would never want to have broken. That's part of the journey, too. One of the things Daniel wrote us, I love this little line, Daniel's been through some rough moments in his journey as well. And just this one sentence from his email, and this is probably a whole podcast. He just said this, I just have to remind myself that I'm not the main character in God's story. That's just...
Wow. That profoundly says a lot right there.
And probably when we're talking about worship earlier, the whole egocentric thing, even in our own walk with God, we get the idea that it's all about us. Fix my circumstance, fix my deal, make my deal better. And to realize that was a breath of fresh air when I read that, because I get thinking that sometimes myself. You slide into that. I got this going and that going. And then this little wake up call. I'm not the main character in this story. You're not. The shack isn't. The main character in the story is Jesus and what he's unfolding. And there's people he wants to love through me, even in times of great pain and brokenness. And it's got to be okay. This journey has got to make room for the deep, dark moments when it seems like I'm all alone and I have only him to commit my life to. And yet he wants to be enough through all that for all of us.
If it's about him and it really isn't about me, I don't even have to get stuck by the, you know, the arenas that I'm not fixed in yet. You know what I'm talking about? The whole dynamic that this isn't a fix me religion. It's like, you know what? It's not about me religion. This is really about him and what he's been. There's a freedom in that. You know, the joy is Jesus is profoundly focused on us. But I don't need to join him in that. You know, I can be profoundly focused on him. And I think if that was sort of where we majored, is I just sort of, you know, said, you know what, I think he's going to care for me. I'm going to spend my time caring for him and the others around me. I do know this thing works out.
It does. Paul wrote 2 Corinthians 4, 2 Corinthians great brokenness in Paul's life, how much disaster and trial he went through at different parts of his journey. And he writes this, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our bodies. I think we forget that's a big part of this story, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Paul just pouring out his heart. And I think the difference is, here's circumstances. They can be brutal, crushing, perplexing.
And that's life.
And yet inside, Paul's saying, not despairing, not crushed, not wiped out.
That's life too.
Conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.